welcome to episode number 11 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about leg breaks, other people on the island, and exocrine glands of the digestive system.
Hey, Micah, how's school?
It's pretty good. Well, actually, see, that this episode's coming out in just a couple days. Like, we're recording it just a few days from
when it gets released.
So, what's going on right now? I'm in the
fourth. You just got some grades back. I think you've been doing a really good job, and I'm proud of you.
Thanks. Let's just say that I'm going into my finals with a comfortable margin of error. But so going into finals, though, it's like when you're an undergrad, you have what we called crunch week.
Yeah.
This is like crunch month.
Yeah.
We have a month to, like, we all know what's coming down the pipeline. I had a 10-hour study session yesterday on a Saturday. We have after school things planned almost every night of the week already, and we're a month away from our exams, and that's how hard we have to hit it.
It's been great knowing you.
Yeah, right? We were driving in the car the other day with some of our local friends, and I said, what did I say? So, like, yeah, I was looking at my I made my study plan today, and I am not going to be a good friend.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly. So, what are we talking about?
So we're starting with leg breaks.
Oh, I know a lot about that. I've done theater. Break
so
a leg. Break a leg.
Oof. Okay, so let's talk about what bones you have in your leg.
I've got a femur.
Yep.
I've got a tibia.
Yep.
I've got, I don't know, a bunch of, like, foot phalanges. Is that included in my leg?
No, I mean, like,
I've got my patella.
We think of it as foot. Yeah.
And I bet there's, like, there's the radius and the ulna and the forearm, but I bet, like, there's, with the tibia, there's another one. I'm trying not to look at your notes.
Look at you all. Like, that's pretty good.
I'm only missing one, right?
Yeah, the fibula.
Yes!
Yeah, so, fibula is on the lateral side.
Uh-huh.
So, your tibia, right?
That's my shin bone.
Yep, that's on the inside. The fibula is on the outside.
Oh, okay,
ladder,
okay, yeah.
Right? And, like, the tibia, that does all the weight support and everything. Like, that's really, like, the workhorse of the lower leg. The fibula is pretty much there just for
rotation?
No, more, okay. What kind of, I mean, it's there for muscle insertion.
Oh, okay.
So it just gives more places for muscles to hold on to.
When I was really good at running, which is not today, and would get, like, shin splints, which bone was that on?
Neither.
Neither?
I don't think it's either.
No.
Because you don't feel your bone like that.
Well, no, like, your shin splints is when the muscle starts detaching from the bone.
Is that true? Because that seems like that would be a much bigger deal.
It's very painful.
It is painful, but, like, you don't hear about people having to get reconstructive surgery because their muscles attach from the bone from running too much.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to look up to see what shin splints actually are because that doesn't quite make sense to me.
Anyway, keep going.
All right. So so the tibia is much more the, like, workhorse. It's thicker and does more stuff. But since they're so close together and the fibula ain't much, it's pretty common that if you break the tibia, you're going to break the fibula. So the breaks are often towards the top of the lower leg. So,
like, closer to your knee.
Yeah. Because there's so many things that are just, like, that height. In fact, usually they're called bumper fractures, as in the bumper of a car. Because, I mean, it's like, it's bumper height, you know. So it's a really common site for direct trauma. Another one that, I don't know, like, maybe it's because I grew up in the Midwest, but I've noticed that there are a lot of questions and things that, and examples that we study that are ski breaks, like skiing trauma.
Oh, sure.
That's not really something that I'm going to have to deal with when I go back to South Dakota.
Maybe Must River, but yeah, not so much.
Even then, I feel like if you get hurt skiing West River, South Dakota, that's not really the hill's fault.
Yeah.
But so, like, another example.
No, West River, South Dakota's got some good skiing.
That's not what you've said off the air.
I mean, like, it's got good enough skiing that you can hurt yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I did take a couple tumbles West River skiing. But so you're skiing and you're falling, but your foot is still in the boot,
mm-hmm.
and you fall forward. So it's that kind of break where you know, your foot is staying still and your leg is going forward.
And your leg isn't going to, your knee isn't going to hyperextend like that, and so something's got to give.
Yeah, and it's your bone.
Yeah.
So at the top, that's where the primary ossification center is, so that's where a lot of the bone growth of the lower legs happen. And so if you break through the epiphyseal plate, through the growth plate, then it can result in a shorter leg on that side.
Oh, okay, sure.
Another thing that's, you know, and I'm just going to use
which
this.
Then, like, messes up your hips, messes up your back.
Yeah, it can lead to scoliosis. And
yeah.
Another thing that's, I think, interesting is that the fibula at the top, that the head of the fibula, so we're just underneath the knee at this point, that's where the common peroneal nerve, like, wraps around.
Okay.
So if you break the head of your fibula, there's a really good chance you're going to hurt that nerve.
Sure.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
So that common peroneal, what that does is that innervates, or that causes the contraction of the muscles of the back of your lower leg, and so the posterior compartment, and the muscles of the lateral compartment are on the side.
Okay.
So the back of the leg is what makes you point your toes.
Okay,
down,
sure.
So to go on tiptoes. And the lateral lets you evert your foot, so rotate it out.
Okay.
Not rotate.
First position?
No, not like that.
Oh.
Like, so turn your foot in like how you would think of a sprain. Okay, now go the other way.
Oh, like turn your foot like you're trying to get the bottoms of your feet to touch.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, then out.
Out,
yep,
that kind of out
side.
Is eversion, and that kind of in is inversion.
Okay.
So that you're no longer able to do those because you've damaged that nerve.
Oh.
So then when you're walking, it throws off
your ability to create balance and stuff.
I mean, even like as you take a step, you can't push off with your foot.
Oh.
Because you've damaged that nerve. Plus, there's a bunch of sensory stuff that it does. So you would lose sensory, basically all the skin on top of your foot. But so the point being that when we think of breaks, we actually have to think of more than just the bone. We have to think of all the structures that are around it and what kind of damage it can derive from it. But so fibular fractures, though, those actually more likely happen at the bottom of the foot, or not at the bottom of the foot, but towards the bottom. So like by your ankle.
Okay.
You know those bony projections that we have on both the inside and the outside, the little bumps?
Yeah, your ankle bumps?
Yeah, those are actually bone.
I would assume so, because it's hard.
Yeah. So the one on the left, they're called a malleolus. So the one on the left comes off your fibula, and the one on the right is from your tibia.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
I know, yeah. It's almost like they have a half cup sort of thing that sits down and, like, cradles the top of your foot, and then the lip pushes out to make the malleolus. But then there's like tendons that connect all that stuff together. There's actually like a huge web of a bunch of different tendons on around your ankle, because it has so many different like motions that it can do. And so ligaments, they can only like pull. They can't push.
Sure.
So we have to have one basically in every direction to keep
that range of movement.
To keep from excessive range of movement. So the thing is, though, sometimes, especially on the fibular side, if you roll your ankle,
mm-hmm.
And you, so it works in kind of a contralateral fashion. So if you want to damage your fibula, which is on the outside, you have to roll your ankle in.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because that ligament can just pull, right? So if you do that to, with excessive enough force, you can that ligament can actually hold on too tight and break your fibula.
What?
Yeah, right? Isn't that cool?
No, but yes.
Okay, isn't that interesting? So, you know, that's the deltoid ligament, actually. It's quite strong. Inversion.
I thought your deltoid was in your arm.
Yeah, I know. That screwed us up for a while, too. Okay. There, yeah, this shoulder muscle, yeah. That's also called your deltoid. But it's also the deltoid ligament down at your foot. So
jerks.
That's by no means all the different kinds of breaks or anything like that, but just kind of an overview of some interesting things on leg breaks.
Awesome.
Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. All right, Micah. So I've noticed since living in St. Vincent that there are actually quite a few different groups of like expatriate types, like people that are not from St. Vincent that live in St. Vincent.
Why do we call them expatriates?
Most of the time it's because they're living in a different country, so they're no longer patriots of their own country.
Then why do we call people who move to America immigrants? What's the difference between an immigrant and an expatriate?
I think that an immigrant is a word that you give to somebody else, and an expatriate is a word that you take for yourself.
Okay. I'm kind of curious about this now.
No, we can look it up. Yeah. There's a few different types of people that you'll see kind of wandering around the streets of St. Vincent that kind of are visual minorities like ourselves.
Yeah.
So there are people that are perpetually on vacation or have retired. That's mostly on Beckway, though. So Beckway is the closest of the Grenadine Islands, and it's just about an hour ferry right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there the other day, and there's a ton of people that will live there for just the winter.
Sure, yeah. And as I'm sure a big part of it is that the American dollar stretches so far.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to go out to eat at a pretty nice meal is going to be like 10 U.S.
Yeah, so why not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yep, there's a bunch of people that kind of will spend their winters here.
Not a bad way to do it.
No, not a bad way to do it at all. There's also, there are Peace Corps volunteers here in St. Vincent.
Yeah.
And I've met a couple of them. They're really nice.
So I kind of assume anybody in the Peace Corps is supposed to be nice.
I've met a few Peace Corps people that have been, like, self-aggrandizing. Like, look at how good I am doing to help all of these people, you know?
But you were Peace Corps, so you met a lot more Peace Corps.
I was AmeriCorps.
Oh, you were AmeriCorps.
Yeah, but anyway.
Okay.
But, yeah, there are Peace Corps volunteers here on the island, and they're kind of a group of people that I want to tap into a little bit more.
Mm.
Yeah, just personally.
Why not?
And there's a ton of Mormon missionaries on this
island. Yeah.
So at the restaurant where I work, They've identified that we've got really good pizza, and so they'll have meetings. The other day I had 8 or 10 in the restaurant, and I couldn't help but sing to myself.
Yeah, what song?
Hello, my name is Elder Price.
No. We can't do more than that because this is on iTunes.
Right.
And that would be copyright
infringement. So, but super, super nice guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've also not met very many mean Mormons.
It's true. I don't know. And then there are other medical schools on this island as well.
Yeah.
And so there's St. James School of Medicine, All Saints, Trinity School of Medicine, and American University of St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Yep. And most of these are not the main campus for that school.
Mm, sure.
That it's like a satellite. And there seems to be that each sort of has their own ethnic draw. Mm-hmm. That, like, for, and I don't know why this is, and I think it's sort of like becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that there's a lot of Americans at St. James, a lot of Americans and Canadians, and then quite a few others. But then, like, Trinity has, or sorry, All Saints has a big Nigerian mm-hmm. draw. Why that is, I don't know, but I would assume that at a certain point, like, you kind of start drawing a lot of Nigerians, and so because there's a lot of Nigerians there, more
Nigerians come, yeah.
Yeah. So I know there's a couple people at St. James that transferred over there, and I think it had to do with the fact that they were going to be with their countrymen, you know?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And there's a certain amount of comfort with that. I totally get it, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, strangers in a strange land.
We launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
All right, so we've talked about the GI tract.
Yes.
And, like, the stomach and the esophagus.
It takes a lot of guts to have those conversations, Micah.
That was a fake laugh. That joke was so bad, you had to fake laugh at yourself. So there's actually quite a few organs.
If you keep talking about this, will you be considered a GI Joe?
No.
Because your name's Micah. All right, just keep going. I'll try to think of more jokes.
Did you stay up late last night writing these or what?
I would hope not. These ones, believe it or not, they just come to me like that.
I'm sure they do. What the hell are we talking about?
The GI tract.
Oh, the GI tract.
Duh.
Yeah. So we talked about a bunch of different parts of the GI tract, like the small intestine, stomach, large intestine, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? But there's a lot of other glands, and you are so damn happy with yourself right now.
I am not appreciating your crappy behavior right now. Go on. Let's continue.
You keep telling me to go on.
Let's continue.
We haven't even gotten through the introduction yet.
Sorry.
We're almost out of time.
Get back to your duty.
Damn. It's like being married to an 8-year-old. You're...
Go.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You're positive?
Yes.
I don't want you to...
Be positive. Go.
I don't want you to keep obstructing me.
All right.
So the thing is, we're not going to delete this either. We're totally putting this up. So we talked about all the different parts of the GI tract, but what we didn't talk about is that there's a ton of extra glands and organs that work on the GI tract, but aren't, like, part of that tract. You know what I mean?
Like your pancreas.
Yeah, like your pancreas, liver, gallbladder, you know, that kind of thing. So the ones we're going to actually, I pretty much just listed them all, but the ones we're going to talk about are the salivary glands, pancreas, liver, and gallbladder.
Okay.
So the salivary glands, you know that you have three paired sets of salivary glands in your like face?
Well, I know that I've got the two that are underneath my tongue.
The sublinguals.
And then the two that I sometimes bite on my cheeks.
No, there's not really any there.
Oh, okay, then maybe I don't.
There's some that are more like underneath your jaw.
Mm-hmm.
There's submandibular, which makes sense. Like, the jaw bone is your mandible, submandibular. And then the parotid, which are like... kind of actually up by, maybe those are the ones you're thinking of, because they're not in your cheeks, but they're up, like, kind of behind them.
Okay. I'm trying to touch them right now with my tongue.
Is it working?
Oh.
So, do you know how much saliva you produce every day?
I don't know.
A liter.
Ew.
you produce 1 liter of saliva per day. It's mostly water and like glycoproteins. And the job of you're looking so gross right now.
No, it's fine.
The job of saliva is to like keep your mouth wet and moist and everything. But that actually helps to cleanse it too.
Sure.
And then when you eat, the saliva acts as like a solvent, so it helps. It does a little bit of like breaking down of material, not like a lot, but a little bit. But as it does that, it makes like a solvent that the food can be in, and then that helps your taste buds suck up those pores to know what it's trying to, or your taste buds suck up that food to know what it's tasting better.
Oh, okay.
So it helps with taste in that sense. It also makes all the food wet.
Yeah, like if you get a handful of chips,
yeah,
you don't want
to swallow that dry.
No.
So it makes all the food wet. So it makes it swallowing easier and moving down the esophagus easier. And also contains different secretions. So, like, it contains salivary amylase, which starts to break down carbohydrates. But more important, it contains lysozymes and lactoferrins. So it contains extra stuff that kills pathogens.
Oh.
So one of your first lines of defense for like ingested food is actually your saliva.
Sure.
Although we do have some like normal oral flora, like we have bacteria and stuff in our mouth that just kind of lives there too.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
So that's your saliva.
I was hearing a podcast about like they were checking testosterone levels and that all they had to do was spit in a cup.
Could be.
I don't
know what that relationship would be at this point in my education.
I don't know.
Okay. Okay, so let's talk about your pancreas. Pancreas is kind of really cool, I think, because it contains both exocrine and endocrine.
Okay.
So it contains stuff that, so the exocrine and endocrine, like it makes secretions, right? But it makes stuff that goes into your blood, and it makes stuff that goes into your GI tract. So it works like in different areas of the body from its one location.
Oh.
On like kind of unrelated things,
yeah.
You know, which I think is really neat. So the other one that's like that are your gonads, that they do both exocrine and endocrine, that they release to different parts of the body that are unrelated.
Hmm.
So in your, can you picture a pancreas?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a main pancreatic duct that goes along that whole thing. And then ends up opening into the second part of the duodenum. So the small intestine,
sure.
Right after it connects with the stomach.
Not going to lie, before we started this podcast, I didn't know what a duodenum was.
Yeah, that's fair.
But so, now it's like my new favorite.
It's kind of fun to say.
But that's why.
I got a script coming up that has a lot of really fancy sounding words that are really fun to say to you. It's all pituitary gland stuff. So the pancreatic duct. So in case the listener doesn't know, the duodenum is the first part of the small intestine. So it's what connects to the stomach, and then there's the first part, which is what connects to the stomach. And then the second part, where it turns down, and that's where the pancreas releases into. It releases stuff like digestive juices and bicarbonate. And do you know why it releases bicarbonate?
Because you only have. You need two more carbons?
I thought you were trying to set up another joke.
No.
So bicarbonate is a really, really basic substance.
Oh.
And you're...
Like it drinks pumpkin lattes.
Yeah. Yeah, it drinks pumpkin lattes. It also is basic on the pH scale.
Oh, okay.
So it can pick up a lot of hydrogens. Your stomach is a really acidic environment, uh-huh. Right? So... Once the stomach does its job and it dumps all that food into the duodenum, it also has to dump that acid because it can't control, it can't separate it out at that point. So your pancreas puts bicarbonate in there to pick up all that acid to balance it out and bring the pH back to a safer level.
Huh.
Yeah. Neat?
Yeah.
Neat. It's also where bile comes through from your liver and your gallbladder. Goes into the pancreas and then gets released through that same duct.
Oh.
So speaking of words that are fun to say, the endocrine part of the pancreas is called the islet of Langerhans.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If I ever start a heavy metal band, I think I'll call it Islets of Langerhans.
Nice.
Mm. Or there's another one that, like, in the gastric pits, they're sometimes called, some of the pits in the GI tract are also called the Crypts of Lieberkuhn.
Ooh.
That, I think,
the
sounds...
The Crypts of Lieberkuhn. Yeah.
Right? Total heavy metal.
Hardcore.
So, anyway, islets of Langerhans, they have, like, that's where they have alpha cells and beta cells, and alpha release glucagon to raise blood sugar, beta releases insulin to lower blood sugar, delta releases, there's also delta releases somatostatin, which does a bunch of regulatory stuff. There's another one called epsilon that, releases ghrelin. Have you ever heard of ghrelin?
No.
It kind of got popular as, or, like, it got a lot of press recently because it's fairly... newly known, but it's what induces hunger.
Oh, okay.
So some people who deal with weight issues could have an overabundance of ghrelin.
Okay.
I like to think that I have a lot of ghrelin because I'm hungry all the time, mm-hmm. and it's not just poor self-control, even though it really is. Okay, so that's pancreas, liver. What's interesting, so it comes from a single type of embryological cell called the hepatocyte. Like, it's basically one cell type that, like, just goes bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's, like, one of the largest organs in your body. So it's interesting that it's so homologous all the way throughout, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Its main function is to produce bile, which, like, emulsifies fats and helps with the digestive process. And inside, it has all these little octagon structures, like, all throughout. Like, if you look at it on a cellular level.
Okay.
So there's little octagons, and on the inside of that, on the very center of that, they have a central vein. So this is the other thing that livers do, is that blood will flow in through the portal system into the liver, go into that hepatic vein, and then go through those octagons. And that's filled with, like, smooth endoplasmic reticulum and things that help detoxify the blood.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, I think it's well-known knowledge that, like, you drink alcohol, it has to go get processed through your liver.
Yep, and that's how it does it, is it filters it through all those cells, through those central veins and all these little hexagons throughout the entire liver. And they also remove, like, old debris, like... old erythrocytes, so like blood cells that have broken down and cellular fragments that are in the bloodstream. That's why there's so much iron in there, because that's where a lot of the red blood cells get broken down.
Oh,
and
sure.
Iron is what's in the red blood cells carrying the oxygen. What else do they do? So they have all these phagocytes that help eat all that stuff. We said they make bile. Oh, so all those things that it eats, that's what gets turned into bile. So, like, anything it can't recycle is bile.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And so how much bile do you think we excrete every day?
I don't know.
6 to 1,200 milliliters.
What does that mean?
So 1.2 liters on the top side?
It means 1.2 liters?
Yeah.
You make more bile than spit?
Yeah.
Ew.
So talking about bile, once the liver produces it, it goes to the gallbladder then. And the gallbladder actually concentrates and stores, it removes some of the water from it, and then that's where it holds the bile, and then that's where it releases. And it actually removes 90% of bile's water.
90
And so this is why we can live without the gallbladder, because, It just stores it, and it processes it a little bit, but it's not like it makes the bile.
Okay.
So we can live without it. We just have to be pretty conscious about diets once you've lost your gallbladder. But let's be real. People who have lost their gallbladder have never probably paid attention to their diet.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was leg fractures, other foreigner populations in St. Vincent, and extracrine glands of the digestive tract. Join us next week. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Booyah Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.